Welcome to the Mendocino series of Voice Dialogue Tapes. I'm Sidra Stone.
And I'm Hal Stone.
We're very pleased to be talking today about one of our favorite topics, the dream process, and how to understand it.
I have paid serious attention to my dreams since I was 20 years of age when I first began my personal analysis. When I met Sidra, the sharing of dreams immediately became a very significant part of our relationship. They taught us a great deal about ourselves and taught us about our relationship, and they helped to guide us through the maze of complex issues with which we had to deal.
For me, the dream process gave me an anchoring point. I'd begun to take my dreams seriously a few years before I met Hal, but with the beginning of our relationship, the dream process became a very important part of my everyday existence. I, too, was struck by how much guidance and clarity the dream process brought to me. It was like having a dear friend constantly sending me messages to help me find my way. This friend would give me pictures that I couldn't ignore, although I remember there were times I would have liked to.
Yes, that's the thing about dreams, isn't it? That when they give you a picture of something that's off, it's in you, it's coming from you, and it's difficult to say no to it.
It's so much easier to say no when somebody else gives you the picture.
Yeah, somebody on the outside, right. In beginning our discussion of dreams, we want to begin in a general way so that we can begin to understand the language of dreams, what they're really talking about. The vast majority of dreams that people have tend to fall into general categories. Once we understand these categories, then a great many dreams make sense just automatically.
Well, let's start with one of the most common kinds of dreams, then. Falling from a high place. Falling from a high place means that you're up too high, right?
That seems pretty obvious.
Seems pretty obvious. You're either too intellectual, you're too rational, you're too spiritual, you're not in your body. There's some way you're not connected with your instincts.
Right.
There's a way you're not solid when you're falling from a high place. This is really the basis for a lot of nightmares. That terrible feeling of falling from a high place, and it's a fairly common repetitive dream in children.
The form of the dream is fairly straightforward. It might sound like, I'm in a high building and I'm in danger of falling. I don't know how I got there. I'm in a precipice in danger of falling off the side. I'm in a dangerous ledge and I'm trying to get down. I don't know how I got there. Sometimes the dream takes the form of being on a scaffolding of a high building and not being able to get down and being stuck in that place. The question to ask is, how am I too high? What feelings am I holding back? Where am I being too rational? How am I being too spiritually identified?
Really, where aren't my feet down on the ground?
That's a good summary, isn't it? How are my feet not on the ground? So it means being able to step back from one's primary self system. It means being able to step back from the dream and really try to examine where it is that one is up too high.
It makes you sort of catch your breath just to think about it. At any rate, that would bring us into the next category of dream, which would be flying dreams, not flying in a plane, but actually flying dreams.
One has to determine here whether the dreamer is a grounder or a flyer. We use this language in talking about a dream process because the grounder is somebody who's very solid in the world. He or she is a very grounded person, able to take care of themselves solidly in the world, able to take care of detail. The flyer is the one who's generally more intuitive, flies easily, both psychologically and spiritually, possibly. Grounders and flyers tend to attract each other, so very often in relationship we have a grounder and flyer combination.
Much to their distress sometimes.
Much to their distress, yes. So if the dreamer is a very grounded person, then this kind of dream represents a balance or compensation. This principle of compensation is a very important one in the dream world because very often the dream is balancing or compensating whatever the self or selves are that we are identified with. So if we are a grounded kind of person and we pay attention to detail and we're not into fantasy or we're not into spirituality, we're not into what is commonly known as flying, the dream comes along and compensates or balances that and has us flying.
Well, then it can work the other way too. That's why you want to know whether a person is a grounder or a flyer. Where if you fly all the time, it's pointing out that you're flying and that you're not grounded. So that would be for people who are constantly spiritual or might tend towards magical thinking, where they don't think they have to ground their actions in reality. They don't have to work real hard, but they can just fly all the time.
I remember the very, very first client ever had at the C.J. Jung Clinic in Los Angeles was a man who always dreamt that he was flying to New York and back, but of course flying without a plane. It was a dream he would have two or three times a week, and ultimately he had a schizophrenic break that took him out of the picture for a few months until he got well again. So there was a good example of somebody really who wasn't grounded in the first place, lived a lot in fantasy and daydreams, and the dream was just giving the expression of a condition that was going on all the time.
Mm-hmm. Flying without a plane. The other thing that happens sometimes is that you get dreams of flying as an indication of where you are in your process. For instance, somebody who's very grounded and is beginning to learn to let go and to fly a little bit. And the first dreams might be just leaping and being able to sustain being in the air for 5 or 10 feet. And then months later, it's leaping and being able to sustain being in the air for 40 or 50 feet. And this can proceed through an entire course of therapy where you can follow the progress and the person learns to fly. There was a beautiful set of dreams that I had seen where this woman learned how to fly, and in each dream she flew a little bit longer and a little bit higher. And in the end, she was able to really fly and control her flying. She could go up and down at will, slow down, move faster, be seen by people, not be seen by people. It was a beautiful set of dreams.
Right. I remember before we started traveling in our international operation in 1981, I had a series of dreams in which I had died and was in a new place, someplace in the Pleroma of the world, and I was moving in space. It was a kind of flying, and I was learning to fly by the use of thought form, and I had to concentrate very, very carefully, and if I lost the thought form, then I would drop from wherever I was and lose the ability to fly in this new way. So the flying dreams, as you point out, are conditions of transformation and beautifully express where somebody is in their process. And it can come back at many different times in the course of the transformational process to give us different clues and different pictures.
Another series of dreams that I've always loved are house dreams. The different dreams of living in a house, finding a new house, changing a house. They're just magnificent. And the possibilities of the houses that you get. Well, what is a house in a dream?
Well, the house in the dream is quite interesting because it's man-made, and since it's man-made, it refers to the personality. So the house is really a picture of personality. For example, if there's an earthquake in a dream, that knocks down houses. That simply expresses the fact that there are deep changes in the unconscious that knock down whatever man has made, and then you'd have to build a new house. You have to construct a new kind of personality.
That's right. There are some house dreams where there's something really wrong with the foundation.
Right. That's a very, very common one. Or the roof is leaking,
mm-hmm.
which simply means that the personality is of such a nature that it's not protected from the world. It's not protected from nature.
And then there are those wonderful dreams when you're in a deep process of finding new rooms in your house, going into an attic you didn't know about and finding wonderful rooms with special furniture or magical objects.
Opening a door and suddenly there's vast space and you find these amazing spaces in your home that you never knew were there.
Or spaces that really need renovating again.
Right, right. Or opening the door to the basement and you go down the stairs and there is this basement room and you discover all kinds of things in it. It can be very, very positive things or sometimes it's very scary things. Because there's a lot that gets buried in the basement of our houses, which, of course, is a picture more of the unconscious. There's the classic dream of C.G. Jung when he really discovered the collective unconscious, when he went down into the basement of his home and then found a trap door and then went under that to the basement under the basement. And there he discovered these relics of antiquity, and that was really the beginning of his formulation of the collective unconscious.
How beautiful that is. I think, too, of the house dreams as showing, again, the progress through a process. I remember when we were doing a 2-week workshop in Holland, and a woman at the beginning dreamt that she was living in a very cramped little house. It was a one-room house, and there wasn't room for all of her things, and there wasn't even a bathroom in it. And then further on in the process, she moved into a two-room house where there was a little bit more room. By the end of the workshop, she was living in an enormous house with all sorts of secret rooms and special rooms and wonderful furniture and art objects and right. magical items.
Wonderful dream. Then there's the dreams where you're back in your childhood home, which, of course, simply describes the fact in the transformational process that one is at a point where one is living in a kind of psychology that corresponds to what it was like in the childhood situation. One's relationship to the person you're living with, let's say, is very much akin to what it was like when you were at home living with your actual mother and father.
That's right.
So this childhood situation is constantly being changed and healed as we go through our own transformational work. And sometimes it's just a picture of being stuck in a certain kind of consciousness that doesn't change, so that we're behaving in our life currently exactly as we were behaving as being son or daughter to the parent in the same way that we did as a child.
That's right. And you can kind of peg that. You know, you can have a dream of where you lived when you were 3 years old before some particular event happened, or when you were 5 years old or 10 years old. So it can be pretty specific about right. which kind of relating you're doing.
Another common dream is the automobile. The automobile, of course, is a wonderful picture of how we get around in the world. So it's a wonderful expression of our extroversion. And here again, the varieties of dreams in relationship to cars are just without number.
It's great, just like there is a great variety of cars outside to choose from. You can choose from a great variety of cars inside. You know, and even if we pick up what we were just saying about acting as you did in the past, and you'd pick up your childhood house in a dream, you could pick up old cars. I remember somebody telling me that she was dreaming about her Volkswagen camper van that she had driven around in the early 70s.
Oh, that's a marvelous image.
It was just so lovely. It was going back to when she'd been a hippie and she'd been free and she didn't have any ties or any responsibilities. It was a wonderful compensatory dream.
Right. That's the beauty of the dream process. This compensatory principle so often helps us out as the unconscious brings up a self or a system of selves that somewhere has just gotten away from us. Either it's been fully unconscious and it comes up, or we've lost sight of it because we lived it at one point. And this is such a beautiful example of that.
Well, she'd just gotten really responsible and overloaded with children and jobs, and she totally lost her free hippie who knew how to smell the roses.
Right. So we can buy a new car in a dream, and it can be a convertible or a flashy sports car, which is a wonderful image, particularly for somebody who has been over-responsible or sedate or something like that. Or we can be driving an old car that really is unsafe, or the brakes in the car may not work, which, of course, we always feel that if you dream the brakes don't work, it's a good idea to check the brakes. Mm-hmm. But generally, it's an indication in the car that something is really out of control, and we'll see later in our pusher dreams how that comes up.
I would like to mention that, though, because we'll come back to it, but the idea of a subjective and an objective reality to dreams. If you do dream that your house has a crack in the foundation, you might want to have that checked out, as well as looking at what it means to you psychologically. Mm-hmm. Similarly, you might want to have your brakes checked out or your spark plugs if you dream that they're not working.
Right. That's really an important point, because an awful lot of people have been trained in dream work to believe that every part of the dream is a part of themselves. Now, at one level, that's true. But on another level, the dream really gives us very important messages on a very objective level, and we really ought to listen and take that seriously. Otherwise, we lose a lot of important information. Driving at high speeds in a car is another common motif in dreams. Driving at high speeds where it's dangerous, driving on a mountain road where you're driving too fast, driving at high speeds and crashing, these are really clear warning dreams. And if one pays attention to them, they tell you something. For example, I remember a situation where a man dreamed really for 10 years that he was driving at high speeds on the freeway going to the office and crashed. And he had that dream for years and years and years and years, and at the age of early 40s had a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
You see,
mm-hmm.
So the dream can give us very important information and very clear warning sometimes that something is off.
Yeah, it's those pictures I was talking about. You know, we can accelerate our own pace little by little, not noticing it. And the dream then can give us the picture of just how quickly we are going and how dangerous it is, and catch our attention that way.
Right. dying in dreams is another motif.
And that's people, a good way to catch your attention.
That catches your attention, yeah. People are often worried about that. They often ask about this, you know, at dream workshops. Generally, in dreams, we have accidents, but the dreamer doesn't die in the dream. It's less common for the dreamer to actually die. When the dreamer does die in the dream, it's not prophetic. It's unusual for that to be prophetic. The actual precognitive dreams that we'll be mentioning soon, where it actually predicts the future in some way, they don't occur where the dreamer actually dies. Our experience is that the death of the dreamer in a dream simply means that some unconsciousness has taken place. Something has gotten out of control, out of whack, and there has been some kind of accident. And the dreamer is not able to have choice any longer.
So he's really not alive.
That's right. He's not alive.
He's not full of choice. He's behaving somehow automatically and in an unconscious way.
Exactly. Another form that it takes is that whenever you disown a certain self or a certain energy, particularly the instinctual energies, they tend to come back against us, and then they shoot us or kill us or create very negative conditions. So, for example, a dream in which an assassin is after me and tries to shoot me, or mafia figures shoot at me, or I'm in great danger. These are dreams that indicate that something has been disowned. Instinctual energy, selfishness, being able to look out for yourself in the world in a primitive way. And if you don't pay attention, then that energy goes sour and comes back and tries to kill you.
So it's really the parts that are trying to get back at you and to get your attention.
Right, right.
I remember always dreaming about unemployed people. I have a very healthy pusher.
Uh-huh.
And it's somehow that people without jobs were out to get me.
Oh, yes, yes. I remember those dreams.
Yeah. They weren't real dangerous in terms of ferocity, but somehow the unemployed guys were going to get me.
You had some good bag lady dreams, too, as I recall.
Yes, those were also wonderful.
Yeah.
At any rate, to get back to the dying dreams, when they involve the dreamer, are usually some kind of a dream of transformation. It means that we die to the one life that we've been living, and we come alive to the next. It means that there's some deeper transformation of our personality, that the primary selves we've been identified with are gone, and something new is happening.
Right. The Buddhists have a saying, to any life there's 1,000 births and 1,000 deaths. And when you watch the dream process and you see all the births and deaths that take place there, you realize really how true that is. But the unconscious is poetic in form. It speaks in allegories. So when it describes change, it uses the allegory of birth and death to describe these changes in the transformational process. So it's a very important type of dream. Another variation is the one where people die and see themselves at their own funeral, and then they see a lot of people there, and they're very happy that all these people have come, or nobody comes, and they feel very depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience is that those dreams have a lot to do with two different selves, and one of them is the victim.
Mm-hmm.
That people who are identified with a victim psychology...
Nobody loves me.
Exactly, have that dream. And then the pleaser identification, wanting people to love them and like them and so forth, and that becomes very important at the funeral as to who's there.
Well, you know, also that can act as a compensatory dream. If you go to bed and you feel like nobody loves you and you dream you died, you know, the old song, nobody loves me, everybody hates me, I'm going to eat some worms.
Oh, really?
And then, you know, and then you die, and in the dream you're shown, no, there are a lot of people that love you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kind of a balancing again and a reminding that there are a lot of people who would care a lot if you weren't there anymore. Well, to continue this idea of change and of transformation, the next series of dreams that we would think about then would be those cataclysmic dreams. There are two ways that we can look at those. One is that they can mark some kind of a dissociative reaction, a big change in our consciousness in that way. But most commonly, it means that there's a major shift in the personality that's taking place or about to take place.
It's a kind of dream that one sees quite typically with people who are into transformational work and who are really concerned with personal change. It's as though at a certain point in their process, they will have some kind of dream of this catastrophic event. It takes a lot of different forms. One form is there's a nuclear war and everyone dies.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's a nuclear war and people are dying and I know that I'm going to be dying also. Or there's a nuclear war and the men of the world are dying. I remember a woman who had that one time. There's a huge earthquake and I feel the rumbling and the shaking. It may be a localized earthquake, or it may be a worldwide earthquake.
Mm-hmm. The Californians like that.
Well, that's a good California dream, right? There's a huge flooding that takes place. That's another common cataclysmic dream, or fire blazing out of control, forest on fire, city on fire. Sometimes it goes along with the idea of earthquakes and fire together.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because the earthquake gives that feeling of a very deep change, a very deep change that shakes all the man-made structures on the surface, and it levels them, and then you have to build again. So that kind of change that comes up from the very, very depths of one's being that the earthquake is showing.
Exactly. Of course, any kind of dream where everybody in the world is dying is going to be a pretty heavy-duty level of change in a person. These kinds of dreams really mean that something is going to happen in the person's life. There is going to be a major kind of shift that's going to take place. So one sees very major transformations taking place out of it.
They can be very frightening dreams to have, however.
Well, sometimes, yeah, they can really be nightmare forms of a dream. One of the things that marks these dreams is people usually have some feeling of something very special about them. Mm-hmm. They're different than the nightmares where a monster is coming to get you. It doesn't have the same quality as that. The fire dreams are interesting because, you know, it's like any kind of flooding or fire. It can be death and it can be renewal, and it very often is a combination of both. Whenever we are strongly identified with a certain system of selves and we lock into it, eventually there has to be some break into that system. For example, in a country that has been for several centuries fairly stuck in its own form, very often there's an invasion of a more primitive people into that country. Mm-hmm. And that more primitive people takes it over, and then they intermarry, and they become the predominant clan in the country until the next invasion, and so forth. And that's been something that's been with us in history for thousands of years. I remember once I had a dream many years ago in which there was an invasion of California by the Mongol hordes, and I lost contact with my family. This was many years ago. And I was very upset, and I was trying to, you know, get up and find them. And a man, not a Mongol, but a non-Mongol man, said to me, your job is not to run around trying to find them. Your job right now is to write. I led this invasion, and it had to happen. And your job is to work with it as best you can now.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So these cataclysmic dreams are like that. They happen because the primary self system is too stuck in some way. And these dreams come to unstick it. They come to make something else happen.
Well, when you think, you know, of the allegorical quality of these dreams in terms of what we said about the earthquake, then if you think about floods and fires destroy what's on the surface again, but they bring with them renewal. A fire often helps seeds to germinate.
Right,
a flood
right.
brings new mud and new fecundity so that everything can grow, so that you have a beautiful feeling of the rhythm of the cycles of life.
Yeah. I remember one time I saw a woman who had been through a schizophrenic break, and a year after treatment started, she had a dream that she was visiting the telephone exchange where all the basic wires were, the central exchange, and she looked in there, and there had been a major fire there, you know, a year before, and now all the wires had been repaired and the exchange was functioning again in a very beautiful way. So there's an example of a fire dream that she didn't remember, but a fire that had taken place destroyed the exchange, which meant she became dysfunctional for a period of time, and the healing process that she went through was the recreation of that exchange system.
How beautiful. Well, again, you know, with these dreams, when they're more transformative, you wake up with almost a sense of adventure and excitement that there's something new on the way.
The next category of dreams we're going to be talking about is the precognitive dream. And here, of course, we have to realize that usually a precognitive dream you only know after the fact, not before.
That's always such a problem.
Sometimes people have such an intense sense of something being precognitive. They're almost sure it's precognitive. It usually isn't. And if it is, you find out.
But you always have to wait. And it's always a good idea, again, to check both the reality of it, the possible objective reality, and then to work with it subjectively.
Right, exactly. I remember a young man who dreamed that he was swinging down from a very high place on a cable, and at a very great rate of speed. It was very dangerous, and he was just missing certain kinds of concrete pillars, and he finally grazed one on the left side, hurting himself only slightly. 3 days later, he was riding on his motorcycle and was grazed by a semi-truck coming the other way, knocked off his bike and thrown under the truck. He lost his ear, but it again just grazed on the left side. Now, who would know that that was a prophetic dream until after the accident? Nevertheless, if you're dreaming of coming down on a cable at that rate of speed, there's danger. Something's wrong, and we can take advantage of those dreams and say, wait a minute now, why am I up so high?
What am I doing so fast?
What am I doing so fast? Right. What am I coming down so fast?
Why aren't I being more careful?
Right. Mm-hmm. Another prophetic dream is an older man who has the dream as follows. I awaken at night and I see a line of light extending from my room to heaven. I get out of bed and begin to follow that light. Mm-hmm. Now, he shares that dream with his son the next day and dies shortly afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So there it's clearly a prophetic dream that's portending his death, and quite beautiful, really, the way it works.
Sometimes people actually dream of the death of somebody close in. Now, this can mean a lot of things. This can mean that the part of them that corresponds to that outer person is dying off in power, that that outer person doesn't have the same power in their lives. But sometimes they are precognitive, and people, particularly people who are tuned into this, who are more psychic in nature and have had precognitive dreams, especially as children, have been pretty upset about it, where they'll dream that a favorite aunt died or a grandmother died and tell the parents about it, and then the actual occurrence will come a week or two later.
That's probably one of the most common forms of precognitive dreams, I would say, because I remember many examples like that in the course of my practice.
Me too, and where the children got very upset because the parents were upset. They were looked at almost as witch-like because they had predicted the death of usually not a parent, usually a relative, an aunt or an uncle or a grandmother or somebody further on the periphery.
It seems as though the children in general tend to have more precognitive dreams. It's like the child is closer to some core, some deep psychic core that allows access to this kind of information. And the farther away we get from that child state, the less available that core becomes.
That's right, or the more disguised it is, like the two prophetic dreams that you gave, which are disguised. They're presented allegorically rather than directly that you got hit by a semi and hurt your ear.
Right. Sometimes the precognitive dream takes a more symbolic form. The ones we've been talking about are fairly straightforward, like somebody dreams their grandmother dies and they wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning with that dream and they find out their grandmother died at 2 o'clock in the morning. But an example of a symbolic one is this example. This is a woman before surgery who dreams, I dream of a flower pot that's being transplanted from the pot into the earth, and it looks very beautiful there.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have to have some sense of symbology there to be able to make that prediction. She made the connection right away and felt quite sure that the surgery was not going to be successful, that she was going to die. But it's a beautiful image, you know, the idea of this smaller pot and that vessel being broken and then being placed into the larger earth.
That's a beautiful, beautiful image. Again, you know, it gives you that picture of the magical quality of the dream process. It gives her the picture to hold on to in terms of what's going to happen, that she's going to be expanded and become a part of the earth rather than contained in a small pot.
So we're going to be continuing with a fascinating kind of dream, and that's the one where we're back in school and we haven't prepared for our lessons properly. Many a person's nightmare. Back-to-school dreams are a very common genre of dream. I'm back in school and it is examination time. I'm not prepared. Or I'm back in school and it's examination time and I haven't attended any of the classes at all.
I lose my program. I usually dream that I'm back in school and I haven't got my program and I don't even know where my classes are being held.
Sometimes the dreamer is studying for a degree or a profession that he or she already has, and there's the realization in the dream that I really don't need to be doing this. Why am I back in school studying this material when I don't need this any longer?
Right, I already have my law degree. I already am a doctor.
Right, exactly. So there's two different ways to look at these dreams. One is that one isn't doing one's work.
Literally, that we're not prepared. We don't know what the lesson is that we're supposed to learn.
Exactly.
We haven't taken care to research what we're doing.
So this would apply to being in some kind of work situation or even home situation where really there are certain tasks that have to be done and researched and you have to, you know, look into things and one isn't doing one's homework.
That's right. Or on a psychological level, one isn't doing one's homework and isn't learning one's lesson.
Right.
Getting into the same arguments over and over again or the same kind of relationship over and over again and getting stuck in the same way.
Right. The other approach is that one is living one's life as though you were back in school. This is particularly true of these dreams where you're taking a course and you don't really need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact is that school is a very difficult time for many people. We have to study. Our life really isn't our own. We can't live on our own rhythm. There's always examinations that we have to take and preparations that we have to make. So later in life, we can be living life as though we were back in school with the same pressure upon us, the same lack of personal rhythm operating in our life as was the case when we were in school.
That's right, with somebody on the outside determining what we should learn, how we should learn, what we should think about it, how we should interpret our lives.
Exactly. My feeling is that that's the majority rule. That's what's there most of the time in understanding these dreams. I like what you said about the fact that somebody else is determining our fate.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really basic to these dreams, that somebody else is determining our rhythm, not ourselves.
And then sometimes when we realize in the dream, hey, I don't have to do this. I've done it already. It gives us the first inkling that we can determine our own fate and we can determine our own rhythm.
Right. I think the old pusher friend has a lot to do with these dreams, because he or she provides a lot of pressure always to be doing things that don't necessarily have to be done or that don't have mm-hmm. to be done in the way that he or she wants us to do them.
Mm-hmm. Or don't have to be done quite that perfectly or that quickly.
Right. Yeah. So now we move to another lovely category of dreams, and that's the tidal wave dream.
Oh, that's one of my favorites. Just where you dream that there's a tidal wave. You're standing on the shore and you can see the water receding and you know it's coming back, or you see that wave beginning to form way out at sea and you don't think you have time to get away from it. And that great feeling of awe, fascination, and panic as you see it building up. Well, what is a tidal wave? It's emotion, it's power, it's unconsciousness. It's that feeling, that wonderful nightmarish feeling of absolute terror. As the person is working on these areas and faces emotions, and as the transformational process moves along, the dream can change. You know, there's a huge tidal wave. I'm terrified. I start to run away. But this time when I turn and look back, the wave is dissipating. Or I find that there's time to climb up on a hill and to look at it and to amaze myself at the intensity and just the power of the entire thing. I remember having one finally where I ran out to greet the wave. And I dove underneath it, and then I surfed it back in, and it was this wonderful feeling of the power of the wave underneath me. That was a delicious change.
Right. So the rule of thumb is the bigger the wave, the bigger the disowned emotion.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a 100-foot tidal wave, you know that there's a tremendous amount of really hot emotion underneath that has been stuck there, that can't get out. And the dream has to keep coming in this way, in this repetitive form, because somewhere that emotion is blocked and can't find access to the outside.
And then the amazing thing is when that emotion finds access to the outside, the tidal wave dreams stop.
Right. A woman who had repetitive tidal wave dreams and finally begun to do some work with this has a dream that there's a huge tidal wave. And then she sees at the top of the tidal wave light shining off the top. And suddenly she sees Poseidon with his trident riding the top of the wave, and she realizes how much power this wave has. So here was somebody who really not only disowned the emotion, but disowned her own power system. And so the power of the tidal wave keeps coming in at her over and over again at night in the dream process. And suddenly, as she begins to face it, there is Poseidon, the god of power and of the sea. Wonderful, wonderful image. But that's really the energy that lies behind that particular image.
Moving into the nightmare territory, let's think a little bit about nightmares and the power of nightmares and why they're so frightening to us. And the quality underlying many of our nightmares is that they're carrying our disowned selves. They're showing us our disowned selves. They're bringing them to us as they try to break down our defenses and get through to us, get us to notice them.
the worse the nightmare, the more powerful the disowned self system that's operating. That's not much solace when you wake up in the middle of the night with a nightmare and you're frightened to death. But when you step back from the nightmare, take a good look at it, you'll find that it has to do with disowned selves, you know, no more, no less.
You know, it's interesting because little children have nightmares so many times of wild animals after them or of terrible witches or demons or wizards after them. And, of course, when you're a little child, you're being civilized. You're being socialized. You're in the active disowning process. Your parents are teaching you to disown your spontaneity, your aggression, your sexuality, all the kinds of energies and behaviors that just are not suitable for day-to-day civilized living.
Exactly. We gave the example in the demonic tape, but I think it's worth repeating here, the idea of a little boy playing outside, somebody punches him. He comes running inside to mother. Rather than send him outside, the mother makes cookies. She makes a very warm, loving space for him, but she doesn't teach him how to fight his battles in the world.
She doesn't send him back out and say, punch the kid back.
Or whatever it is she has to do. That night, he dreams of a lion in his room that's after him, because that day the lion was taken away from him. And now the other child or the other children have the lions and he has nothing. So now he's at the mercy of the lion in the dream who comes to attack him. So this is how these monsters and lions begin to form in children's dreams. And as you say, they're just extremely, extremely common. In the adult form, a man dreams that the mafia is coming to him, and they say to him, you haven't paid your dues, and they start to beat him up very, very badly, and he wakes up in a nightmare with that dream. Well, the mafia for him were really his neglected, aggressive impulses. He was a man who was totally identified with being positive and loving and caring in the world. His business partner was a mafia type who was exactly his opposite. He never learned his lesson, and he had had repeated warnings in his life that something was really off, ultimately resulting in cancer. And finally, the mafia comes and says, you haven't paid your dues. And when he says, I'll pay, they say, it's too late. See, it's too late. That's the nightmare. Yeah. The fact is it's never too late.
And you can always reclaim.
And you can always reclaim, right, right. But it means that it's gone a pretty far distance, you see, this disowning process.
Well, women particularly have nightmares about men breaking into their houses. You know, I'm in bed, I hear a noise downstairs, and I know it's a burglar or a rapist, and the man comes up to get me and to beat me up and to, you know, to misuse me in some way or another. It's a very, very common nightmare in a woman. And I'm terrified in the dream. I'm terrified. I don't have a gun. I don't have a knife. I have nothing to defend myself with. And isn't that the picture so often of a woman who's learned how to disown all of her instinctual energies, all of the fighter in her? She's not allowed to have the instincts that would protect her and enable her to fight back these intruders.
Right. We always become the victim of our disowned selves, and nowhere is that better seen than in a nightmare. So your comments about this woman who has disowned her instinctuality is just, you know, a wonderful picture that here she's the victim totally of exactly the energy she needs to be powerful in the world. And the more she gets rid of it, the more it comes back to haunt her. Rather than be upset with nightmares, we should be grateful, absolutely grateful that we have them. Because the fact that we're still having the dream, the fact that the nightmare still haunts us is an indication that the unconscious is still available to us. We still have a chance to learn from it. Once you don't have the dream available to you, how are you ever going to find out what the situation is?
That's right. You can reclaim your nightmare lions or tigers and bears and all of the wild animals. I remember having this wonderful dream. It wasn't quite a nightmare of this pirate outside my door. And I was in a little fisherman's cottage, and there was this pirate outside the door, and I woke up so excited because I realized the pirate was me. And I remember when I was a child, I always wanted to grow up and be a pirate.
These nightmare dreams often are repetitive, which brings us to another genre of dream, and that is the repetitive dreams. And this basically means that the unconscious is trying to get a message to us, and we're not getting it. So over and over again, it's bringing up this disowned energy that's trying to get to us and reach us and attack us or rape us or kill us or whatever it is, and we're not learning from it. We keep treating it as a pariah. We keep treating it as something to be frightened about.
Instead of saying, how marvelous.
Yes.
That's my tough person outside.
Right, exactly. Children have repetitive dreams a lot. They dream of monsters. That's a very common one. One of the most common, invasion from outer space, is another very common one. Animals that are chasing them, dangerous animals. The more the child is forced to be good, the more dangerous the animals are going to be, and the more that particular repetitive motif comes up.
Well, there's another one, too, where you dream, where the child dreams of the room closing in on him and gradually squeezing all the life out of him. And isn't that what we do often in the socialization process? The house, the civilization, squashes all the instincts out.
Right. When I was studying the dreams of cancer patients, I saw a lot of dreams that had the motifs of animals being killed, repetitive dreams. A woman dreams that she is killing snakes, cutting off their heads repetitively from the age of 3 or 4 on into adulthood. That's a very common motif that we found in cancer patients and in their dreams. Another common repetitive dream is that I'm crashing, you know, driving in a car at high speeds and I'm crashing, clear warning dream. I'm falling, the ones we mentioned at the beginning, another repetitive dream. I'm trying to get someplace. This is a good one. I'm trying to get someplace, but I can't get there. It's like I'm stuck in molasses or I'm in slow motion and I'm totally frustrated.
Or I'm so tired I can't move my legs.
Right.
These are marvelous dreams. Then there's another whole group of dreams where the unconscious is literally trying to get a message across to us. For instance, a woman dreaming 3 nights in a row that her husband is having an affair with a particular person, and she tries to work on it and figure out what it means about her disowned selves and see how this could be bringing a specific message to her. And finally, she tells her husband about the dreams that she's had 3 nights in a row. And he said, oh, yeah, I am. So here her unconscious was literally trying to give her a very concrete message.
Now, sometimes those dreams are really quite a shock because these kinds of affairs can be going on for a long time and the person refuses to know. But we often say that somewhere we know.
And it's the unconscious that really tells us.
Right. Another category of dream is similar to these, and that's the dreamer under attack. Again, we're similar to the repetitive dream and the nightmare dream. A man is chasing me. The image a 21-year-old girl has, a huge gorilla is following me over and over again. I'm in the land of wolves, and it's very frightening. There's a wolf nearby, and I'm terrified that he will attack me.
Again, what is this? It's our disowned selves literally coming after us, trying to get our attention, trying to get us to integrate them.
Right. The reason we spend so much time on this is that they're such important dreams, and people tend to get frightened, and they try to get rid of this or treat them like bad dreams. Oh, I had such a terrible dream last night. I was with these wolves, and they were out to eat me. And we try to get rid of them. If we can understand that those wolves who want to eat you really are your energies that are not being claimed in the right way, and that those energies want to make contact with you, and the more you ignore them, the nastier they get. I mean, what a difference that would make.
It's really such a wonderful feeling to know that the wolf is me, that the wolf is my power, it's my ability to deal with the world. And then as one works with those energies, they change and the dreams change. I remember one beautiful dream of the wolf, after a series of wolf dreams, coming up to the man, putting his front paws on the man's knees and looking deep into his eyes, and the two of them communing.
Or the woman who dreams repetitively of this man chasing her, and she's afraid of harm and rape. And this goes on and on for years and years. She finally starts therapy, and after just a few months of therapy, in the dream, she stops, turns around, and says to the man, "Why are you chasing me?" And the man says, "Because you keep running." It's like the fairy tale. You know, the dragon starts out with 3 heads. If you don't deal with it with 3 heads, soon it has 5, then it has 7, then it has 12, and God knows how many heads it ends up with. So the more you run from these things, the more heads they grow, the more charge they build inside.
Or conversely, the more you try to destroy them, the more heads you cut off of the dragon, the more it grows. So for every head you cut off, 3 replace it.
Right. The example of the huge gorilla that follows the young girl, she was in therapy at the Center for the Healing Arts with one of our therapists there. And after a year, she had the following dream. She's walking down the street. This huge 50-foot gargantuan gorilla is following her. She turns around, and she stamps her foot, and she says to the gorilla, really screaming at him, "Why do you keep following me and chasing me?" And suddenly the gorilla becomes a monkey and jumps into her arms. The more you run, the bigger it gets.
And when you stop to face it, it transforms. It really is a remarkable process,
right.
This process of facing the frightening energies, realizing they're yours, and taking them into yourself, because they give you just that power again that you need, just that power to face the problems. We've talked a little bit about some of the pusher dreams.
They're some of my favorites, I must say. I'm pro-pusher.
Yeah. I'm pro-pusher, too, because, you know, that pusher keeps pushing us. I might put in a plug now for our pusher tape, because we have a whole tape on the pusher, how it acts in our lives and the dreams that it brings. We have a whole series of dreams that come in to protect us from the pusher and to balance out its energies, to start compensating. And as we said, one of the most common dreams is, my brakes don't work anymore.
Yeah. It's when pusher energy has taken charge of the personality and really is out of control. You can't stop the car anymore. And that's the feeling you get sometimes when your life is really out of control. You don't have choice anymore. I remember a dream that somebody had once in which they were being driven by a huge truck that came up behind their car.
Mm-hmm.
And that huge truck was driving it.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't driving their car anymore, but this truck literally was pushing their car,
and the
car was out of control. I mean, that's how the pusher works, and that's where you get these dreams of the brakes not working.
We just heard another one like that a couple of weeks ago, where the woman looked in her rearview mirror, and there was this huge, huge truck behind her, just pushing the car. And of course, you know, if you think about it, the pusher is much bigger and has much more energy than we in our little cars.
Yes,
and will push
does.
Us faster and further and harder than we can go.
Right, right. We may know on a theoretical level that that has to do with vulnerability, and that somewhere we're vulnerable and the pusher is coming in to make us safer. But that doesn't change the fact that when that truck pushes your car long enough, it's very dangerous to us psychologically, and it's very dangerous physically to our bodies.
That's right. You know, with that pusher energy, it starts to move so slowly and it increases so inexorably and by small increments that you don't even notice it. It reminds me of the story people tell of a frog, if put in hot water, is going to jump out. If you start it in cold water, put the light underneath it and heat it gradually, it'll boil to death.
Oh, my God, that's a fantastic image.
It's a fantastic image. That's the way the pusher can operate,
yes,
in our lives. Start it slowly enough, and if you don't realize the buildup, you're in big trouble.
Right.
So the unconscious and the dream images are something to really red flag us when our pusher is out of control.
Yeah. Another variation is one we've mentioned, and that is, I'm driving very fast, I'm in danger of crashing, or I crash, typical pusher dream. Or I'm trying to get someplace, but I'm stuck, like I'm in slow motion. That's the compensatory side. So I think that gives a fair picture of what those pusher images are like. The next one is the dreams of cruel people, cruel men and women, tortures, cruel kingdoms. And our experience there is that we're dealing with some part of the psyche that really is cruel to us or other people. The inner critic very often can exert such a power on the personality that he or she just squeezes the life out of us.
That's right, or the rule maker, or the perfectionist,
right,
where they have no mercy. They're on us, they're at us, they're demanding things of us. They're constantly, literally ripping us to shreds with no mercy at all.
Right. You know, people object very much to child abuse in the world. And I would like to here make a case that the child abuse that goes on inside of us is every bit as bad, if not much worse, than the child abuse that goes on in the world. Because these inner tormentors that come up in our dreams as these cruel figures, these inner tormentors absolutely destroy our inner children.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something really to pay attention to, because it's very easy to get lost in the outer child and what happens to him or her, and not to realize that the inner children are every bit as important, because if we lose the connection to them, we really lose something in the world that's very important and very precious. The dreams of concentration camps are like that. I'm in a concentration camp, I'm in a Russian concentration camp, a German concentration camp. All of those have to do with a psychology in which there is a total cutoff of feeling and spirit, and particularly the inner child and his vulnerable and playful and magical aspects just gone.
And very frequently the dreams will literally bring up a child who's being tortured or mistreated or abandoned or pushed out of the way.
Right. Another motif that is common is the journey motif. This is one that comes up a lot with people who are doing transformational work. And it's fairly simple. It just means I'm on a journey, and the journey can be a boat journey, a train journey, a plane journey. It goes on all the time in the transformational process. They're wonderful dreams.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're on foot and you're going along a path, and that path takes you into new and wonderful adventures too.
I remember one dream that a woman had. She had been ill and was using a lot of drugs, and then began therapy, and she had this dream a few weeks into therapy. I'm on a journey. The church bells are ringing. The drugstore is closed.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So here's a new journey in which she is not going to be able to rely on the drugs in the same way to solve the issues of her life, but just going to have to get to the thing that's underneath the pain of her life.
And these journey dreams very frequently will bring up specific associations. They'll bring us to places that need to be looked at
right.
in very specific ways. They can be beautiful places. They can be frightening places.
Mm-hmm.
We can journey back to our childhood homes and forward in time. There are all
right.
sorts of
That's
wonderful
right.
places to go on our journey dreams.
I just thought of another one years ago. A woman dreamed that she was on a journey in a forest, and she was on a path, and as she walked on the path, the trees began to close in behind her so that she had to keep moving forward. She couldn't go backwards.
Mm-hmm. That very frequently will happen, or the road will wash out. The road will wash out behind, so you have to continue forward and you have to go over the mountains. And sometimes you look back and the path that you've just come down looks absolutely insurmountable or unpassable. And you wonder how you got to the place you got to, but you've done it.
Right. Spiritual dreams are another category of dream. They're quite beautiful when they come. Spiritual or transpersonal energy is a kind of energy that simply is not personal. And for some people, it brings in very strong religious feelings. It may bring in the feeling of being blessed. Another reality, another dimension of consciousness, takes many, many different forms. One woman dreams that she is with a line of people, and they're bringing their offerings to an altar. And they all have very beautiful offerings that they're bringing to this altar. All she has is the gunk of her life, and it's sort of dripping and wet on this huge dish that she has, and she just feels very ashamed of this gunk offering.
Mm-hmm.
And finally she gets to the altar and puts it down with this feeling of shame, and a giant hand comes from heaven and presses into the gunk, and it becomes a fish, and there's enough food for all the people. That's a beautiful example of a symbolically expressed transpersonal dream, in which the other powers, higher powers, transpersonal powers, manifest in the dream process and cause a certain kind of experience, a certain shift in consciousness. Because for her, she saw the personal issues of her life as being not important. And suddenly she had an opportunity to realize they were important, they mattered.
Mm-hmm.
And all these difficult, painful personal issues that were being worked with constantly meant something in the long run and were related to the higher spiritual energies that she was constantly seeking. You can't separate the spiritual energies from the gunk of our lives.
That's so true. On the other hand, one often has dreams of actual spiritual masters coming to teach. The spiritual energy comes through in a very, very clear way, so they can be known spiritual teachers that appear in dreams, like Yogananda or Sai Baba, or Christ himself, or the Mother Mary. They can come in and they can do actual teaching to the person in dreams at night, and then the teachings are held. Or they can just be energies, or unknown teachers, or energy bodies that come in and do the teaching. There can also be just voices that make statements about what is happening. The feeling on awakening from dreams of that sort is one of absolute bliss and calm, and a feeling of having been in touch with something truly, truly otherworldly, and often you want to go back to sleep and pick it up again.
Right. I wish we had more time to go into those, but we don't. The objective-subjective level of dreams is a certain theoretical issue that we have to cover, because the issue in dreams is your dream saying something objectively about the other person, or is it subjective or symbolic? If the woman dreams three times in a row, my husband is having an affair, obviously, this was making a very direct statement about her husband, and when she asked him, she found out he was having an affair.
Mm-hmm. Then the child, for instance, who dreams that my mother is a witch, even though she looks nice on the surface, her dream is telling her something.
Right. Or you dream that your brakes don't work on your car. That very possibly may have a symbolic or subjective meaning, but it certainly is advisable to check the car. Mm-hmm. I have seen many, many, many things picked up in dreams of that nature where, you know, the person had no idea. So it's like we are not raised in Africa. We don't have the primitive intuition that the African is blessed with. But our dreams, when we tune in, can give us a connection to that African intuition. And that's why we need to pay serious attention to this objective level. A lot of people who work with dreams tend to work with them only symbolically as parts of who we are. And that's valuable because they are symbolic to a large extent. But our rule of thumb is always consider the objective side first. What is your dream possibly saying about that other person or your direct relationship to that person?
I remember one that I had when I was a teenager. I was infatuated with a young man, and in my dream, he turned into a snake and slithered off into the grass, and I laughed to myself, and I thought, oh, he's a snake in the grass.
Well, that's perfect. I mean, that's...
stuck with me all these years.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. I remember a woman who was about to rent an apartment with her teenage daughter, but she hadn't signed the lease yet. That night, she had a dream that her prospective landlord was a sleaze and that it wasn't safe to be with him. So these dreams can give us important information. All the other kinds of dreams are basically reflections of parts of ourselves, and there the symbolic side, of course, has to be considered. This tape is not a tape that deals with how we work with dreams, because there are literally hundreds of ways to work with dreams. Nevertheless, we wanted to mention a couple of approaches to dream work that we find to be very beneficial and also very safe. The first thing is to consider going back into the dream and revisualizing it. This means waking up in the morning after the dream is finished and then literally closing your eyes, going back into the dream and feeling it all over again, seeing it all over again. All kinds of new information can come in at that time.
The next thing you can do is to record your dream. This can turn into a chore, but it's a very helpful way of dealing with dreams. Just write them down in a journal and take a look at them, see what they say. This distances you and puts the dream into the perspective of a poem or a story.
Right. Sometimes people actually use that material as the basis for writing a story or a fairy tale or some kind of creative activity. Another very valuable thing with a dream is to step back and look at it as though it weren't a dream. And then to ask yourself, what are your feelings about the behavior of the dreamer? For example, a woman dreams as follows. My child is playing near the street. I'm vaguely aware that he could be in danger, but I put the thought out of my mind because I'm sure nothing will happen. Just then I see a truck coming towards him and I start to panic. End of dream. Now, if the dreamer could step back from that dream and look at it as though it weren't a dream at all, how would she feel about that woman who's there? She'd say, my God, why doesn't she listen to her own intuition? I mean, she had a feeling that something might happen, but she just ignored it. And of course, that was the dreamer's problem. She ignored her intuitions. Mm-hmm. So by stepping back and looking at a dream as though it were real, you get an emotional reaction to the behavior of the dreamer that can be very, very valuable.
That's a good one. Then you can share your dreams. Certainly you and I share our dreams, and it's a very, very rich way of establishing deeper intimacy, of honoring the dreams, and of finding out what they have to bring us, because they give messages to one another. Sometimes my dreams are clearer to you than they are to me.
Right. Sometimes I dream something for you, and sometimes you dream something for me.
Right.
Using creative media with dreams is very, very helpful. This is wonderful with children, but it also applies to adults. Painting a picture from a dream or making something out of clay from a dream, that can be very, very valuable. And with children, it's one of the best ways and only ways to work with the dream process.
Mm-hmm. And last but not least, we can use dream images as a place to focus or meditate, not try to do anything with them, but just sink into them. If there's a particularly numinous or beautiful place that we dream of or a special person, we can go back into the dream and use that as a meditation takeoff point. To sum up, dreams have always been special to us. They are the magical messages from the deepest parts of ourselves. They can frighten us, they can shock us, they can inspire, comfort, or uplift us. They can provide us with some of our most profound teachings. This tape was designed to give you a foundation for understanding the general nature of the dream process. We hope that your dreams can be guides for you, as ours have been for us.